push up a thing, suckling sing. Yard and foreign kick up, rock wine.
Sing!
Ding-a-ling-a-ling,
sing!
Band silent swing,
sing!
DJ Ace stuck up in the beer bum rhythm,
sing!
Ding-a-ling-a-ling,
sing!
Gold bell a ring,
sing!
Knife and fork a fine for dumpling, booyaka booyaka for shabba ranking, shabba rocks disappear with your another man.
All right, welcome everyone to the Lest You Forget podcast, historical podcast by Tenamintian Media. You're listening to Davey. Yeah, I'm supposed to introduce myself now. Yeah, so you're listening to Davey. The song you just heard is Ting-a-Ling by Shabba Ranks off his album Extra Naked. Grammy Award winning album. Either way, welcome. If you like politics, interested in politics, you can check out our political podcast, Checkmate. Our most recent episode, we spoke to Miss Ashley Burnett. Great, great woman from the Twin Island of Trinidad and Tobago. And she came on and spoke about the Trinidad election that's coming up. So this episode dropped on August 9th, right? Trinidad election is on August 10th. So if you're listening to the episode on August 9th or 10th of 2020, you can head over and check out what she had to say about the work being done on the grounds in Trinidad, brief history of the PNM and UNC. It's just a great episode. You're going to laugh, you're going to learn. You're going to love it. Promise you. Me love it, sure you're going to love it. Great. So, yeah. But, yeah, welcome to our 10th episode. Definitely excited about where we are and the growth and... Yeah, we are coming from far. If you listen to our first episode, you know it was trash. So you don't know where we are coming from. Far. And forever love the support that we have been getting from everyone. What else is there? Yeah. So this is our first episode about food. We talk about politics a lot. We talk about sports, talk about music, we talk about clothes, fashion, history. And this, now we're going to talk about food. Not my favorite thing in the world. I'm not necessarily a huge fan of food. I engage in the eating of food because of a necessity and not because of enjoyment. It's just a very long, painstaking process of figuring out what to eat, how to prepare it. Why? Give me a drip. I can't survive on that. So, yeah. But we're going to talk about food. And we're going to talk about banana milk, you know, which is like a staple in Jamaica public schools, especially primary schools. So we're going to give a brief, overview of it. But before we even get into that, we'll have to, go to the Ministry of Education and why the introduction of banana milk was, so important and revolutionary in Jamaican system. Why was it created, you understand, basically. So we're gonna give a brief overview of that first, a good 5 minutes, 10 minutes probably. Then give me a time limit now. So yeah. Also, we're gonna give a brief overview for that. You understand? So we're just gonna get into the episode. So just chill. If you are listening to this, cook. I don't know. You play some game. You drive. Yeah, you know. We're gonna learn about banana milk. Alright, so first thing, you understand, we're gonna list our sources for this episode. Alright, so we had a lot of sources. We had we used the paper, bringing together outstanding primary teachers, educators from throughout the region to share best practices, which was published by USAID Jamaica. We also have materials from the US Library of Congress. And Jamaica Education. We also have Development Administration in the Caribbean by Jay Walker, published in 2002. Right? We also have A Short History of Education in Jamaica, published by M. White in 1977. And we also have Post-Colonialism, A Very Short Introduction, published by C.J. Young. C.J. Young. We also used we also used a dissertation which is titled dissertation, which was published by Winsome M. Chunu, for his partial fulfillment of the requirements for the degree of philosophy in the College of Education at Ohio University, where you focus on like the development of Jamaica education system. And yeah, basically, yeah. So yeah, I hope Mr. Winsome graduated, because it was a lovely paper. It was a great read, actually. If anybody need a copy of his dissertation, let me know. It was easily accessible to us, so I will definitely share that. But yeah, I hope I can share dissertation. Yeah, I think I can share dissertation. Yeah, so if anybody want a publish of that paper, let me know. And I'll definitely send it to you. It was a great read and very informative read. If anybody's interested in like going into education and understanding Jamaica education sector, or even going into public policy of creating policies for Jamaica, then, or throughout the Caribbean, then this is a great read. So yeah, go through all of that now, get the sources, we can start the episode, you understand, bag of niceness. So let us begin. So we're gonna go first, as I said before, we're gonna go through the brief overview of the Ministry of Education. All right, so let us begin, shall we? So the first period where education was really put on the forefront of like Jamaica government was back in 1838, you understand, emancipation year. And what was established was the Negro Education Grant, and this grant allotted $7,500 to provide for the moral and religious education of the Negroes. And this is according to White in his 1997 book, which I gave you the whole sources right there. Yeah, so that was what money was supposed to do. It's unproblematic. It was, and apart from being very problematic, the grant also failed because the money allocated by the British government was seldom spent on education. Instead, it was sent to like religious missions. Yeah, so the money went to the church. It never went to teach anybody none. You understand? Then in 1880, they established the Jamaican Schools Commission, which was to oversee the construction and administrations of schools. The members of the commission were appointed by the Jamaica governor and were primarily men from the Anglican church or the legal profession. The commission governed admittance, course of study, and financing of schools. So you know Fairfax say yo, that the worst problematic. Understand? And then by the 1930s, education in Jamaica was decentralized, and education and teacher elementary. You don't know English, I can feel me. This is a history podcast, not an English podcast. So when you come here for learn history, not English. So yeah. Elementary and teacher education were under the preview of the Department of Education. You understand? So then established a Department of Education, while the Jamaica Schools Commission supervised secondary education. You understand? And then in 1943, a committee was appointed to access secondary education. The chair of the committee, Professor Isaac Kandel, made several recommendations, including that a single body should control both elementary and secondary education, and schools should be reclassified as primary and secondary, and a common examination should be instituted that would facilitate the transfer of students from primary to secondary schools. So all of them something here, but common entrance and GSAT and PEP. Yeah, I'm gonna thank Professor Isaac Kandel, and all this information is taken from the book that I just told you by White. So let us continue. Now in 1944, you don't know, universal adult suffrage, a new constitution was put in place, and that was when the first Ministry of Education was established. And the first Minister of Education was J.A. McPherson, right? And it was under his tenure that for the first time in education, that education was being placed on the national policy agenda, right? So them of a Minister of Education, right? The official Ministry of Education that we know today, the one where they crossed the road from Hero Circle, you understand, with all the bashment and framework, not the building, you know, not the building. Me attack like the description on paper of what they're supposed to be doing was really established in 1953. You understand? And that ministry was in charge of a national education policy that was, it was developed and put in place, and that expanded the scope of education and redefined educational priorities. Understand? No. All right, we'll go back now. Sorry, we'll go forward. And in 1955, you know, Manley, he got Norman. Norman. Mr. Norman Manley. He got signed in as premier. And everybody knew, if you know Norman Tenor as premier, he was very big on education. Safe to say all the Manleys are big on education. Whether that be Norman, Michael, Edna, Douglas. If you love sociology, I'll definitely tell you to read Douglas Manley papers. He has some great papers on Jamaican society. It was very interesting read. So Manleys are big on education, so it comes as no surprise that like a lot of things were done underneath Manley's tenor. So we're just gonna go through that. And I'm listing this because it is important. What Manley did is important for the 1960s, right? So under Manley tenor, you had the Jamaica Institute of Technology, which was established in 1958. And in the same year, the Caledonia Junior College was established under the Emergency Teacher Training Scheme to address the shortage of trained teachers. The education law was amended in 1958 so that the old education department of the colonial period might be integrated into the ministry, and that the constitutional responsibility of the minister for the entire educational system might be fully established. The 5-year education plan, which was established in 1955, was expanded into a 10-year plan in 1957, and by the following year, 15% of government funds were being spent on education. Some of the money was allocated towards a program of grants in aids that brought secondary education within the reach of many more children in 1958. You know, this is like the greatest accomplishment. The common entrance examination was introduced, which offered an unprecedented 2,000 free spaces in high schools each year. Previously most high school students were the fee-paying children of the well-to-do, the upper class, with only a handful of parish scholarships available, through which the bright poor students could gain access. And then in 1960, a pension scheme for sugar wrong, someone messed up here. That's for another episode. So sorry. Yeah. Skip out the last part. I must say about pension scheme. All right. So, yeah. So, Manley did all of that. To be fair, Manley's contribution to Jamaica is never studied. But we're going to change that. He's actually I think I've mentioned this somewhat on the podcast. But Davy. Not speaking for the podcast. Me, Davy. My research is in Norman Manley's tenure. So, yeah, I do all of his stuff. So, yeah. Then, so we just have to put in that. So, we move to 1962 and Jamaica gained independence. And Bustamante was ushered in as our first prime minister. And under his tenure, the government built several primary schools. There's a large-scale building of primary school. The curricula was revised. Their teachers were provided with college training. There was development of basic schools for children under 6. Vocational training was introduced, and there was a enough scholarship did I give it for poor students to go to secondary schools. Basically, that may I say. Understand? And then there was also the 70-30 plan, which was introduced in 1963. And basically, that plan came because there was a huge demand by the lower class for spaces into secondary schools. May I tell you the whole thing? Professor Isaac and his thing, but getting the exam to primary to secondary school, and Manley introducing the common entrance. So, you know, that can happen, right? But it never did a work out, you understand? Because private schools, which were predominantly scattered with the persons of the upper middle class and persons of the upper class, they were getting all the spaces because they have access to good teachers and good resources and all of this. You understand? So what the 70-30 plan was, it provided a huge policy shift during the education development of Jamaica. And what the Ministry of Education did was they decided to allocate a percentage of spaces for students from the lower class. The spaces would be allocated based on performance and the common entrance exams. Under the plan, 70% of spaces in secondary schools were assigned to students from the public schools and 30% were assigned to students from the private schools. You understand? So all of that did I go on with. You understand? That never did I work out too well. But you know, we're probably going to do an episode in the near future about the history of Common Entrance and GSAT and PEP. Probably. But yeah, just know say that it wasn't executed effectively. You understand? We'll move again. Alright? Then you have the Education Act, which was passed in 1965, which stipulated that the Ministry of Education was responsible for the formulation, implementation, and management of education. You understand? Then 1 year later, you had a New Deal for Jamaica, which was introduced. And the New Deal was funded by the World Bank and represented Jamaica's first comprehensive long-term policy for education. You understand? So, the New Deal. Yeah. But now I got through all of that. Just know, say, what the New Deal was supposed to promote the education of the people of Jamaica and the progressive development of institutions devoted to that cause. Now, I would say, under the New Deal, something happened, but we're gonna leave that for a new episode. It's about education and books. Hint, hint. You can't pick it up, you want to pick it up. It's easy to pick up if you know what I'm talking about. If you can trace the year, that period, to education, to books, you can pick up what happened under the New Deal. All right, then. Also, move. Then, 1972, Michael Manley was sworn in as the Prime Minister of Jamaica. And if you're over, would I say 50, if you're over 45, 50, then you are going to stand by that Manley is probably the Jamaican Prime Minister who did the most for the education ministry, right? And because during that time, there was like a huge increase of our literacy rate of persons being educated, of persons enrolling in schools. You understand? Right? So, yeah. But if you studied Manley, I'm going to say studied Michael Manley. I'm not mean like you read one book. I mean like studied Manley, which is kind of not hard because it's such an over-focused, overdone period in Jamaica history, the history of Michael Manley Teno. Like, yeah. Yeah, I'm tired of hearing about it, to be honest with you. But the Manley administration, they didn't have a unified approach to education. You understand? People believe they do, but it really wasn't. In my opinion, and I said my opinion meaning Davey's opinion, Manley's approach to education was very broad. You understand? And it was very broad, and because the education policy fell under the overall developmental policy for Jamaica, meaning that it was the first time you really saw, well, and it was the first time because, again, it was the first PMP Prime Minister of independent Jamaica, you saw socialism values and socialism ideals pushing to our public or policy making. So it's like, because the policy of Jamaica was very socialism wise or socialism geared, education came under that. I don't know if that makes sense to you, but that may I try to say. I understand the new words feel me more wide, but that may I try to say. Because the policy them was socialism, you understand, was very socialistic, the education policy is going to be socialistic. And that may I basically try to say. You understand? It wasn't like the man say, oh, education was going to pinpoint socialism. No. Everything was. Right? So, there were several achievements. Huge achievements. They have the 3-year assessment of the educational system, which really and truly need to be brought back. need to be brought back. You have the free education up to age 14. You have the improvement in administration, and you are the famous establishment of the service corps. Your graduates are expected to work on social development activities. You had tuition-free secondary schools, which became a reality in 1973. And then you also had like the exchange program between Jamaica and Cuba, where you had like which is still being established today, you know, if you're going to study vet sciences, because I know so I can't pronounce that word, or medical sciences, you can go to Cuba and get a Cuban scholarship, and I use that, and blah, blah, blah. Fun fact, McNeil, former Minister of Tourism, he was a beneficiary of that, which you wonder, but still, you wonder. yeah, and Walker also states in his book, the sources I listed in the beginning, he stated that in 1974, the Ministry of Education was allocated and spent the largest public sector disbursement of any ministry in the independent history of Jamaica. Yes. So, yeah. So all of this happened, you know, like, a lot of this happened under Manley reform, you know. So, yeah. So, I think I gave a run through of what was happening in the Ministry of Education. And we were there. 20 minutes? All right, good. Yeah, episode supposed to be the 45. So, good. So, did I run through of that? No, the 1980s election came. Not getting too much into that. I'm tired of telling you, I'm not touching that. And the 1980 election came. And Edward Seaga was sworn in as Prime Minister of Jamaica. Right, JLP was put into power. And during the Seaga administration, there was a lot of accomplishments and initiatives that were placed in effect. You get me, I try to say? And they're still being put into place today. You understand? And yeah. So first, textbooks were available on a rental basis. If you went, well, my high school, right up to fifth form, all of my textbooks were rented. You understand? So, yeah. Yeah. So, big up Seaga for that, for overseeing that. Like, all of my textbooks were rented. I don't know if other high schools had that, but I know mine was. Then also there was 14 secondary schools were upgraded to high schools. And according to Evans in his 2001 book, the textbook, yes, according to his book, right, according, you know, I can't pronounce that. It's not even important. I don't know what I'm putting in words, so they know I can't pronounce into this, but it's not important. I swear, it's not important, because I can't pronounce it. More importantly, right, there was also an increase in the role of international agencies in the formulation of education policy in Jamaica in the 1980s. The United States Aid to International Development, USAID, funded educational programs such as the Organization of American States Project on Curriculum Development, Family Life Education Project, and the United Nations Development Program Provocational Studies Project for grades 7 through 9. So yeah, a lot of those things happen. The increase in the role of international agencies was because of a thing which I will not get into, because again, it's not important. But yeah, if you study international relations at UWE, and I would say at UWE, if you study international relations at UWE, you probably know why. But that's not important to life. But just know all of this was happening. That this is like all of what, you know, what Seaga administration did, their greatest accomplishments. Another thing that Seaga did, right? No, Seaga appointed the first ever woman as Ministry of Education, right? And she is integral to the story of Bun and Milk. She's integral, you understand? And her name was Mavis Gilmore. Right, so I'm gonna just give you a brief backstory for Mavis Gilmore. Oh, yeah, guys, we start the episode now. No, we are talking about Bun and Milk. So, all of that I'm gonna just give was a brief overview of the education ministry and all of them accomplishments and blah blah blah. This was like Bun and Milk already. So, Mavis Gilmore, and this is taken from a Jamaica Observer 2018 article. Now, Mavis Gilmore, she's a former member of parliament for St. Andrew West Rural and a retired cabinet minister, right? And yeah. She was born on April 1926. So she was born on April 13, 1926 in St. Elizabeth. As far as we know, the woman is alive and kicking. So make herself Miss Gilmore, Mrs. Gilmore, Dr. Gilmore. She's a doctor, Dr. Gilmore. Big up yourself, Dr. Gilmore. She attended Blake's Tutorial College, and she also attended the University of Edinburgh, Scotland, and Howard University in Washington, D.C., USA. Howard University, I heard, is a great school. I can't say for sure, you know, but I have friends who go there. They say it's a great school. They say that a lot of smart people go there. I leave it at that. Dr. Gilmore studied medicine and went on to become the first woman surgeon in the Caribbean, serving the Kingston Public Hospital from 1960 to 1976. Right? She entered politics in 1976 and won the St. Andrew West rural seat, which she held until 1989. As a member of Edward Seaga's cabinet, she served as Minister of Education from 1980 to 1986, when she was replaced by Dr. Neville Gallimore, and as the first Minister of Social Security and Consumer Affairs from 1986 to 1989. She received Jamaica's fourth national honor, the Order of Jamaica, in 2009. You see me? So yeah, that's Dr. Gilmore for you. Also, because context here, Howard University have a special history with the Caribbean. Eric Williams he taught history there. As far as I know, his office is still there. That's Dr. Eric Williams from Trinidad. Norman Manley has an honorary degree from the university for his contribution to Caribbean development. And their president currently is a Trinidadian, Wayne Frederick, and their VP is also a Jamaican. I'm strongly believe she's a Woolmerian. Tanisha. Jesus, Tanisha. Yeah, me type in VP Jamaica Howard University Woolmers Girls. I name that here. Dubroy. Tanisha. I probably pronounce our first name wrong, but I know it's DeBroy. Dr. DeBroy. Yeah, so Jamaica has a special connection. The Caribbean has a special connection to Howard University. So, yeah, it's no wonder Dr. Gilmore went there and thrived, you know? And again, as I said, becoming the first woman surgeon in the Caribbean. Yeah. Now, why Dr. Gilmore is important to the story is because it was under her tenure as Minister of Education, right, that the Nutribon and Milk policy was put into place, right? And Dr. Gilmore, she she made a great contribution to Jamaica education sector, which to me is still not talked about today as much as it should. Like, moms, a bag of things for a grant for moms, you understand? Because she focused primarily on improving primary education. Like, as she's saying that, yo, if I can improve the primary education sector of Jamaica, then majority of the problems in the secondary and tertiary probably more than likely will not happen. You understand? So she had a 5 policy initiatives, and her initiatives was Nutribon and Milk, classroom single seater, teacher training upgrade, physical units, and compulsory primary education. I mean, everybody forgot about primary school, about primary school education, basically. Yeah. So we're not gonna touch upon the other four. We're just gonna touch upon Nutribon and Milk, because again, episode named Nutribon and Milk. So the Nutribon and Milk. Oh God, people texting me. Oh, fair first. The Nutribon and Milk is a new idea, right? The idea that Jamaica took was copied from a Philippines model. So Philippines was basically like the first country to have what we Jamaicans call the Nutribon and Milk. Understand? Well, no, them call it Nutribon and Milk too, to be honest with you. So that was like their first, they were like the first country to do it. And I'm going to read an article from the Esquire magazine about the history of the Philippine model. And the Nutribon of the 1970s of Philippines was a bread born out of good intentions. Nutribon was designed as a convenient, ready-to-eat complete meal for public elementary school feeding programs to combat child malnutrition in the Philippines. Schools in economically depressed areas where children weighed below the normal weight for their age were the priority consumers of the Nutribon. For its pilot program, 30 million Nutribons were given to 200,000 children from grade 1 to 6 during the school year of 1970 to 1971, as reported by Ruben William Engel, nutrition advisor, and Albert S. Farah Lee, food for peace officer of the U.S. Agency for International Development, USAID, mission for Manila. Manila, the capital of Philippines. Each one had 500 calories and 17 grams protein. The Nutribon program was made possible through the joint effort of the U.S. and Philippine agencies and some local bakeries. The arrangement was pretty straightforward. The U.S. through the Food for Peace program, and the Food for Peace program and the nonprofit charity CARE facilitated the donations of wheat flour and non-fat dry milk powder as the primary ingredients of the Nutribon. Engel's team of nutritionists worked for a USA Nutrition developed the bread formulation. The U.S. Wheat Associates provided technical assistance to local bakeries handling the production of Nutribon. The baking of Nutribon was done in schools with facilities for baking or by commercial bakeries, as reported by Mara M. Bean of the U.S. Department of Agriculture Research Sector, which developed the soy fortified flours for donations under the Food for Peace program. The Catholic Relief Services, the School Health Division, the Bureau of Public Schools, and the Department of Education and Culture took care of the distribution and coordination on the ground. And the Food for Peace donations, the Food for Peace donations were part of the Public Law 480, which was enacted by the U.S. Congress in 1954 as the Agricultural Trade Development and Assistance Act of 1954 that enables the U.S. to extend food assistance and emergency aid to nations in need. We are going to talk about this in another episode that will come up very, 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 very soon. Probably the next episode. Probably next 2 episodes, to be honest with you. I'm not sure. I have to look on the calendar. But yeah, we're going to talk about this Food for Peace charity donate, Food for Peace donations. So yeah, that was just a brief overview of the Philippine model of their Nutribon. So what Miss Gilmore did was that she basically copied that model and reenacted in a Jamaican model to fit Jamaican society and Jamaican students. You understand? And a lot of things were, it was important, you understand, because even though Manley had these great plans of free tuition and, you know, this whole system, his policy wasn't focused primarily on primary schools. You know, it was very tertiary, very secondary focused, and she wanted to get to the root of the problem. And she has said, yo, her work up to today is, she forget more prayers like JLP people, like, prayers are my life. I would love to talk to her, because I think what she did was she made a huge change in Jamaica school system. And I definitely want to know, like, where the idea sprung up. And she should have sleep one night and it come to her. You know, she in the bathroom and it come and she should have drive her. Something and it just sprung up her. She read an article, but it definitely will be something. And plus, she's a medical doctor. So she would definitely understand the connect between, what's the word? Nutrition and child development and education. You get me? I try to say. You know? Yeah. So, let us move. Plus, Hawaii people are usually my favorite people. Most times. The ones from the Caribbean are usually my most favorite people. So, let us go into the Nutribon and milk, right? So, what day I know? What were they? 33 minutes? All right. So, the Nutribon and milk. The first of Gilmore's policy initiatives to be discussed was the framework. You understand the framework of it. So the Nutribon consists of half pint of milk and a bun that had a 3-day shelf life. They were transported to some primary schools twice each week. According to Gilmore, the financial situation in most homes precipitated this introduction, which also meant to replace an old-fashioned method of cooking meals outside with inadequate utilities in unsanitary surroundings. You get me? I said before. So before, there was a school feeding program in Jamaica. But then they give people half food and it wasn't sustainable. You understand? And yeah, so you know, Ratsan, Wuochan, yeah, cook at food. A bag of problem can go all over with food. Understand? She said that the cook food, the smell of cook food all over the place, you can only think of rats and roaches and rodents and all that was cut out. And this was an interview she did in 2008, right? But then, even though it was such a great initiative, you understand, and people who benefit and grew up on pan bulla and milk, because it wasn't, we said Nutribullet, but a Nutribullet, a bulla, right? There was issues, and the issues was like a lot of problems when it started, when it make and put into place, like a bag of problems it sprung up. I was gonna go through those problems, right? First problem, you understand? Even though some teachers welcome the Nutribullet and milk, others refuse to sell the items because they took away from their four function as teachers and shortened their lunch hour as well. So the teacher then basically said, yo, we come here for teach, we never come here for give up bulla and milk. A member of the leadership team of the Jamaica Teachers Association back in 1985 stated that the Nutribullet and milk distribution, quotations, put into process special responsibilities in some schools. Another teacher noted that teachers were asked to assist with the counting and distribution of buns and milk that were sent to each class. They also had to collect and count the money. You understand? There are other teachers who described that they were supposed to do extra cleaning, and this was sometimes involved with the milk carrots. They were cleaned out and a bag of nonsense. Yeah. Naturally, it was more work, according to a teacher. Naturally, it was more work, and sometimes the crates that were sent to the classroom contained punctured milk containers. With these, students would spill the milk all over the classroom floor. Teachers then had to clean up. Many teachers were unhappy with performing the custodial function that occupied the distribution of the Nutribullet. You know, we're just gonna move from Nutribullet and start saying bulla. Yeah. Because people think about bone. Can't talk about bulla. Yeah. And even though teachers had issues, them still operated because like best interest of the students. You understand? There in other cases, teachers refuse to sell the items. If a teacher refused to sell the Nutribullet and milk in his year class, then those students were allowed to purchase from other teachers. You understand? According to the director of the Nutribullet and milk program verified that the ministry received several complaints from teachers, which resulted in helpers being placed in some schools to assist with distributions. You know, and then remember, no, some teachers do the extra work, so you don't know, so you're gonna have salary negotiations, all of that as well. So I'm just moving forward, there's a whole lot of issues. Another issues was that some of the buns started vanishing out of delivery truck. Sometimes the ministry documented that 24 bags were sent to the school, but you only received 20. Therefore, you have to be alert because some other people cited a means of obtaining a little extra money. You understand? Those teachers had to police the Nutribullet as well. So imagine, they might teach, they might serve as cleaner, they might serve as logistic director. No, they must serve as police officer. Yeah, one teacher said that the Nutribullet money was stolen from her dryer and she had to replace it from her personal funds. Many teachers emphasized that they resented being responsible for what they describe as ministry's money. These added responsibilities were too much on teachers' plate and distracted from the core function of teaching and placed an additional emotional toll on teachers. And let's get this straight. From the inception of Jamaica, inception of time, you understand? When humans crossed Bering Strait and come across to the other side of the world and settled in Jamaica and a TNO set up shop, you understand? From the Spanish come, Christopher Columbus and him crew invade, you understand? The English come and invade, you understand? Independence, emancipation, independence, you understand? From the inception of time, teachers now get money, Jamaican teachers now pay good. So just imagine all of this on your plate. Again, I get a good salary. So just imagine what about you. Understand? Then, my mom tells us they have all of these responsibilities, you know? They have like 10 jobs, you know? Then there was an additional job. They were also transporting. So my mom tells them a logistic director also involved in transporting the Nutribullet to the schools. You understand? One principal said he had to use his personal vehicle. You understand? According to this particular principal, the ministry claimed that the remote location of his school made delivery impossible. So he decided that since his students were asking for the Nutribullet, he would use his personal vehicle. You understand? Going in a personal pocket. Forget personal gas. You understand? To transport the bun to the school. Eve went on to argue, quotations, the people at the ministry said to me, if you can come and pick it up yourself, you will get it. Therefore, you see, I use my VW Volkswagen for years until it rotted out. I lost a whole car. You understand? So, so it's like that compare with the ministry. And the ministry decided that what they were going to do is have Nutribun and milk delivery truck. And at the time, don't know if this changed, at the time, the persons who were responsible for the development of the Nutribun was Nutrition Productions Limited. If I'm not wrong, I them still in charge, right? NPL. And at the time they were located on 6 Marcus Garvey Drive, Kingston 15, the Long Strip, Marcus Garvey Drive, Long Strip, Connect Portmore to Kingston. Connect a lot of places to Kingston, but it's a long road. If you're not Jamaican or not from Kingston area, it's this long road with the worst traffic. Worst traffic. Don't make like let us not. Alright, let me continue. So them get the truck, you understand? But here the problem with the truck. The truck is going into rural areas, you understand? But how are you going to tell the people them, say them have to drive the truck on non-existent road? No road there. You understand? Like, we said before, the vision there, no? But there were so many underlying problems, you understand? One teacher went on to say that, yo, sometimes the trucks would break down on the road and would not get to the schools on time. You understand? Teachers were forced to adjust class schedules to accommodate late lunches. Additionally, the principal of one urban primary school stated that the school had not received milk for several months, even though the ministry has sent out. You understand? Beverly Williams from Franklin Town Primary, a teacher who was responsible for the school feeding program, told the Jamaica Glean on March 3rd, 1985, that the school had not received a supply of milk since January of that year. You understand? The director of the Nutri Products Limited also stated that the delay was due to expansion at the factory. You understand? But I'm so afraid the truck played a part. Because what am I going to reach? Power on hill when you can't, it's impossible to go up on the hill. You understand? We were on the road. There was no road. You understand? There were other, like, and if the teacher never have no vehicle, like the principal who I mentioned, teachers would, like, have, bus, like, taxis and pay drivers to come and bring it to the school. You understand? Nutribuns were also dropped off of a small shop in a town closest to the schools, and teachers would go and collect them. You understand? And all that, like, the stress, it was just a stress. It was a stress. Now, imagine, I tell you before, you know, because of all of these underlying factor and it not reach the school in time, you understand? You're gonna have problems because of milk. I mean, I'm telling you before, you know, the bulla and the bun have a shelf life of 3 days. Like, it gonna spoil. You understand? So, it gonna spoil. You understand? So, that discarded, waste of resources. And then in some places, when it reach on time, schools, especially rural schools, they not only say rural schools, schools don't have the resources. Underdeveloped schools did not have facilities to keep the milk at the correct temperature, right? While others did not have electricity. Understand, the milk would be delivered to classrooms and would sit on the floor in some cases for 2 hours before being distributed. Oftentimes it was spoiled. And then they not even know so the milk spoiled. So they still gotta give the pity them. The spoiled milk. And understand, and the hazards of contamination due to poor or no refrigeration resulted in stomach cramps and diarrhea. You understand? So all of that did a go on, and it just did a, oh my God. It just did awful. You understand? It just did awful. It did awful when it started. And those problems still continued. It still continued throughout, still continue today. But yeah, that was the inception stage. And one of the other issues, no, I'm not even gonna say this was an issue. It was, I'm not even gonna say it was issues. It was just petty. The students themselves had an issue. So what it was is that although the majority of students emphasized that the affordability of the Nutribon and milk made it an attractive option for most students, they also stressed that the students found it monotonous and the students never like it after that time. So it's like they must say, every day we get bula bula bula, like what is, like what is this? So one teacher noted that many schools continue the provision of cooked lunches. You understand? Yeah, they still provided cooked lunches because, like, it was a situation where students were complaining about it, they just continued it. I mean, a free food, like, oh boy, it was a lot. It was really a lot. But there was also an issue where when the assessment was done by the end of Miss Gilmore tenure, there was a report by a ministry's project manager's report by the monitoring of project JAM 2727, which noted that that there was a steady increase in attendance was observed in most schools. You understand? And the report went on to say that teachers and principals praised the programs as a sole contributor to the improvement in attendance. And I'm basically saying the Nutribon and milk, they help graciously because, like, people are still coming to school a lot. You understand? Because remember I told you from the beginning that one of the issues is that a lot of students, I don't know if I said it from the beginning, but a lot of students couldn't come to school because there was no food at them yard. You understand? This was the 1980s when Jamaica was coming out of, like, a great economic fallout due to a lot of issues in the 1970s. Right, so yeah, so that was their reason for the improvement in attendance, Nutribon and milk. However, there was an article done in the Daily Gleaner on October 16, 1985, and according to the article, they did a consensus of teachers at Morant Bay Primary who said the opposite. They said that the Nutribon program did not help in improving attendance, and in a study done by Kumar Singh, COOMARSINGH, whatever his name is pronounced, in 1984, and another study done by Blair in 1986 also agreed with the teachers that there was no improvement in attendance as a result of the Nutribon and milk. So, like, I don't really know what to say, but yeah, two accounts give. But I'm gonna say before, if you personally benefited from Nutribon and milk at your primary school, like, if you benefited from it, nobody can tell you otherwise. You understand? If you benefit from it, if you don't benefit from it, I swear, you understand? But yeah, this is why I don't trust polls, because they're very messy. All right, so that was just the history of Nutribon and milk. Hope you guys enjoyed it. We're not done yet. That's just the history of it and how problems arise in, like, the first couple of years under Miss Gilmore tenure. Because even though she created a great program, there were a lot of things that were set of her control. And you had to fix the societal problems in Jamaica to really get the full effect of a policy, which is basically the overall issue with every single policy in Jamaica. Politicians create a policy and don't understand, say, cannot work because the systems at B, right? The systems at B, meaning societal issues, don't provide for it to thrive. So it's basically like it have potential, but it can't reach the full potential because the resource is not dead. You understand? So yeah. And I will stand at that. So I'm just going to, like, 5 minutes and talk about some development. So over the years, a lot of things have been done to try to ensure that your Nutribon, you know, could be beneficial to everybody. So over the years, they move from bula, they move from bone to the famous bula. You understand? Like, legit, like, bula. You know, get some people that have a love of peer with bula, with primary school bula. Big up on yourself. personally, I would say the butter, you know, that was the best way to have it for me. Personally, I was good friends with people in my style. I was good friends with teachers. I was friends with teachers. I was good. The auxiliary staff in primary school and high school, great friends. Forever, always, even in university today, I'm huge friends with the auxiliary staff. I don't know why. My spirit take to them and they take to me. When I was in primary school, I would always go to them for butter. So we usually just spread panabula, we just have a grand time during break time. Yeah, big up everybody I saw about primary school. Big up on yourself. That's where I attend school. So yeah, over the years there have been improvements and developments of Nutribun. So they move from bun to bulla, and then there was cheese bread. I distinctly remember cheese bread when I was in primary school, and the cheese bread usually come, we never get milk with the cheese bread. I'm lactose intolerant, so I never had the milk. Me can't talk about the milk. I never had it. I'd have the pink milk, I have the white milk, and at one point it was chocolate milk. Legit, one bottle was chocolate milk. I remember that. 2011. I remember. I don't remember when it was, but I know there was chocolate milk. Yeah, but the pink milk is famous. Pink milk, famous. I have the white milk, and then what I usually have was a pineapple juice, and the pineapple juice usually come with a cheese bread, and the cheese bread be kind of funny because it was like this huge bread with a small clump of cheese in the middle. It was so petty. Let me just say, yo. And sometimes I want to break it in half and just go to the cheese, but then you have all it, you know, because you have to save for the moment. You understand? So you eat round the cheese bread, so you can just have the cheese and the bread at one time, you know? Yeah. So they were trying to mix it up a bit, and not, that's NPL, trying to mix it up a bit and not to make it, like, boring. You understand? But you can do so much and so much more. And apart from developments, there is also problems. There was an article in the Gleaner. There was an article in the Gleaner where there were reports that some schools were over. No, there were reports in the Gleaner that some schools were like overcharging. You understand? We're overcharging students for the Nutribun and milk. You understand? And to be honest with you, this is a breach of government policy. And according to the Gleaner article in June of 2012, I'm gonna read this out. And this is 2012 at the time, so don't watch the price. A Sunday Gleaner probe that has found that in addition to charging up to two times the stipulated price, some schools were also selling bags of a limited supply to adults. The education system has clearly mandated that students should contribute $2 per meal, which is a bun, bulla, or similar item, and a drink. The ministry also mandates if a child is unable to pay, he or she should not be deprived of a snack. But despite the clear guidelines, the Sunday Gleaner has confirmed that some primary schools are charging students between $3 and $4 per meal. The prices were jacked up even further when the students sell the baked products to adults. A source provided that a bag of juice milk containing 10 plastic is sold to $40 or $50 to outsiders, while a bag of bullas is sold for $20. So that was a problem that was there. There was also an issue where this is the thing. If you know Nutribun, you know, you're roping a like, roping a white bag. You understand? Roping a white bag. And it was hard for you. It wasn't hard. It was impossible for you to know what where they make water. You never know the nutritional values. You never know none of that. Because even though the Philippine model, you had like the calories given, as I said, 500 calories per bun. Jamaica might never have that. You don't know what make in it. You don't know what in it. You understand? Because it just blank. And that came under fire by several persons. In a Gleaner article, Shannon Grant, who's a registered nutritionist and school personnel, said that she's worried that several parents and herself as well are worried that they have no idea what the children are consuming because the bags are completely blank. We don't know the ingredients or the nutritional content of these products. It makes no sense whatsoever for a nutritional company to be distributing something to children that has no form of labeling to indicate that they are consuming, especially now with this drive by the government to get persons to eat healthier, right? So that was also an issue. You understand? So, I love that it are gone. You understand? There was also another famous issue back in 2018 where yes, Royal Reed. If you're a Jamaican, you know Royal Reed. He's not medication minister anymore. But back in 2018, he was education minister. He made, under his tenure, the decision was made by the government to remove bullies from school, noting that when they did the checks and balances, it was indicated that it was a waste of resources. So I'm going to read an article published in The Gleaner in 2018 written by The Gleaner writer Jordan Gilpin. And basically what it said is that yesterday the All right. Reed, also addressing the 54th Jamaica Association annual conference earlier this year, announced that the several food items, including the popular bulla cake, would be removed from public schools as a part of a campaign to promote healthier eating among students. Yesterday, the education minister was responding to an article that was published in The Gleaner last month, where schools noted that there have been few or no alternatives since the removal of the bulla cake since the start of the new academic year. In September, we believe that the ministry is doing all it can to provide healthy options for students. No. All right, so we'll move further, right? Yeah, but this is the thing. Even though the government was removing it, there was no, like, alternative given. There was no, like, broad policy given to, like, to replace the Nutribullet milk. You get me, I try to say? So even though Royal Reed had these grand plans, and did he have grand plans for the education ministry? Pun intended. $50 million worth of plans. they didn't provide a good alternative. The only alternative that was provided during that time was a manna pack rice, which would be established for the Nutribullet bullas and fruit juices. But this is the thing. These manna packs were not a substitute for the nutritional support that the ministry provides to the school through NPL. All right, I'm going to read an article from The Gleaner. All right. And this says, by 2018 as well, in fact, there was a one-off donation of manna packs to the ministry by a charitable organization in the latter part of last school year. The ministry decided to share the commodity with all of our primary schools, including St. Mary's All Age, which is the subject of recent reports. In promoting a healthier lifestyle among our students, and based on survey conducted in 2017 to 2018 school year, with this in mind, the ministry has decided to take a new approach in providing more nutritious snacks for students and in keeping with the strategic direction of the school feeding program. So basically, one bag of filler, basically, because there was like no direction given. They never basically outline, say, yo, we are coming this. And the manna packs donation, and I made a mistake here. It was 2019 that this article was published. One of the issues was also that manna pack did a come under fire. You understand? It was really coming under fire. There is an article in the Observer published in 2018 where a principal, Roger Curlew. I want to say that the name is Curlew. K-I-R-L-E-W. Curlew. The principal of Casanova River Primary, an infant, which is a school in St. Catherine, objected to the food with this label being distributed at his school. So basically what the problem was that the company that was distributing these manna pack rice, right? It was a donation, but the company was a Christian organization called Feed My Starving Children, right? And this was what Curlew went on to say to the Observer. I have to ask my colleagues in the cluster how these things prepare, because we didn't know how to. This is not the first time I have seen them, because I know Food for the Poor has it. Some years ago, they sent a few here, but I didn't have a problem with that, because to send them to the school in general is okay. But to send them to replace the nutritional products is where I have a big problem. You understand? So that was also an issue. People didn't know how to prepare them. They were just rice, and the people didn't feed my starving children. Like, to be honest with you, like the name Feed My Starving Children. So yeah, that's currently where the development of Nutribon is. It's been replaced. There has not been like a great alternative to it. I can't say for sure what happened this year because COVID come and knock everybody for six. So I don't know exactly what the ministry has in place for Nutribon and milk. Who in charge of Ministry of Education? Samuda? Alright. Come again. If I go back again. So anybody from the Ministry of Education who can provide, so like, yeah, let me know. Like, if you're working in a ministry or know anything of what exactly was is the alternative given to replace Nutribon and milk, let me know. Yeah, so yeah, that's basically the episode. I can say I benefited from Nutribon and milk, but my Nutribon and milk came with special things. I didn't just get Nutribon and milk, I get other stuff. I was on a PATH program, primary and high school, so even though I got the bulla and the milk and the, as I said before, I can't drink milk, the juice and stuff and all of that, there was also other benefits that I get just because I was on the PATH program. So I don't know if there were, like, if they replaced the Nutribon and milk, if those things, those benefits were still given to students who were on the PATH program. Yeah, and I don't think bulla and milk existed in high school, were they? No. So I don't know if, I don't know, to be honest with you. But if anybody knows, if anybody like does education policy or work in the ministry or one of those youth, what you call them people there? Them people that always, the people that think them by your youth. Youth advocates, youth activists. Yeah, if y'all know, let me know, please. Yeah, because I don't know the replacement or what it was for PATH students. Because I know, as I said before, myself being on PATH and other persons, I know I'm PATH benefited greatly from it. Yeah, so, yeah, let me know. Unanswered questions that need to be answered. And that's the episode. Big up Dr. Gilmore. Anywhere she there. Would love to meet her sometime in my lifetime. As I said before, I love talking to Howard people. They are some of my most closest people in life. And yeah, grade school, depending on who you ask, but grade school. Yes. Yeah, we got everybody at Howard University. Yeah. So yeah, we did it. Finished episode. Thanks for listening. Hope everybody is, you know, being calm and safe. Yeah, we're just gonna close that episode. I'm still gonna know how to finish the episode, yeah, I swear. But yeah, let us close out, and we're gonna close out with Shaba, you know, big up himself and the OMT. Alright, let's go, guys.
Rock wine! Sing! Ding-a-ling-a-ling! Sing! Band silent swing! Sing! DJ Ace got up in the beer.